my life, I've been extremely curious, always wondering how things work, always asking why, always wanting to try something new, like the time I thought I should ride my nephew's skateboard downhill while wearing heavy wooden clogs. Have you ever heard the phrase, "it seemed like a good idea at the time"? Well, it wasn't a good idea, and I had the swollen and bruised ankle and the crutches to prove it. So I've been feeling that way about this sermon. Back in December, when we were planning January worship services, I knew right away I wanted to preach on the aftermath of this past election cycle. Yet from the moment I sat down to write, I'd felt nothing but pain and anxiety. A topic that seemed like a good idea at the time was now keeping me up at night, giving me a headache, and honestly, twisting me in knots. Friday afternoon, I said to Jason, "I honestly don't know what's going to come out of my mouth on Sunday." I talked to Kent about it too, hoping that he would give me some nice, neat solution to my dilemma. You know, some deep, meaningful TV parent type of advice that would wash away all my concerns. Our talk was helpful, but I was still in turmoil. And that's when I realized that that is the message that I needed to deliver this morning. The election of Donald Trump as President of the United States caused a great deal of heartache and pain for many Americans and for many in this community. It left some of them afraid for their personal safety and the safety of their family. It left some wondering if their families would be separated by deportation. It left some fearing discrimination and persecution. It left some anticipating the loss of all the feminist and anti-racism and anti-oppression gains that have been made over the last century. It left some fearing that we would soon be at war, if not with another nation, than within our own nation. It left some people just plain afraid of everything. Afraid, angry, anxious, hurting, wondering how this possibly could have happened. But that wasn't my reaction. While I was most certainly shocked election night, I wasn't surprised. All through the campaign, I felt the undercurrent of racism and discrimination that exists in our country. I felt the fear. And I honestly couldn't understand how people were shocked when it came fully to light on election day. In my mind, this wasn't a new thing. It's not like our world was perfect on November 7th, 2016, or even before Trump announced his candidacy. This darkness, or whatever you want to call it, has always been there. And now it was just out in the open. I did not vote for Donald Trump, and according to the rules of our democracy, he still won the election. And as I stand here today, he is the 45th president of the United States. And this is where things got really hard for me. I was witness to the sadness and the pain that many were feeling. I held people that I love very much while they cried over the results. We devoted an entire weekend of my congregational studies class to post-election grief. One of my closest friends felt the need to sever relations with his own family over differing political views. My heart ached for them all, and their reactions weren't in any way unusual. A health map study found that 90% of 1,000 people surveyed were experiencing emotional distress because of the election, regardless of their political affiliation. Google internet searches for presidential election depression and election anxiety skyrocketed. Again, this is on both sides. 30% of Hillary Clinton supporters and 40% of Donald Trump supporters reported experiencing depression and anxiety because of the opposing party's candidate. Over Christmas, I watched a happy moment get awkward real fast when someone learned that a person they loved had voted for Donald Trump. Another of my dearest friends said that he was afraid to admit that he'd voted for Donald Trump for fear that his UU church, where he had been a member for 30 years, would ask him to leave. On Facebook, a friend who I've always considered intelligent and wise described the inauguration as the end of the world as we know it. Nearly 3 months after the election, there are people who can't have a conversation that doesn't include a lament or a joke or some mention of Donald Trump. This stuff is real. These feelings are real. So here I am, the student minister, wanting to say it's time for us to move forward when there are a lot of people who just aren't ready to do that. And I agonized over whether I should even give this sermon. And if I did, what could I possibly say? And would it jeopardize the relationships I've built here over the last 6 months and taint the remainder of my time here? Would you ask me to leave? And then Friday night, I heard my mother's voice reciting St. Barton's Ode, as I'd heard her do so many times before she died. I am hurt, but I am not slain. I shall lay me down and bleed a while, then rise to fight again. There it was. Everything became crystal clear. My message to those who are still hurting, I see you. I love you. I honor your pain. When you're ready, when you are done bleeding, rise and fight again. Throughout his candidacy, this president has threatened to undermine the progress we've made in our quest for equality. Let's not be naive. We weren't perfect before he came along. We had work to do, and most of us were doing it. Yeah, now he's here, and so are we. We'll regroup and get back to work. That's what the marches were about yesterday. The energy and the buzz felt round the world was magnificent. We will rise to fight again. As an individual, Trump has said and done some horrible things and has threatened to do some bad things as president. But as of this morning, our democratic system is still pretty much the way Barack Obama left it on Friday morning. Despite my friend's dire pronouncement, the world has not ended. And this isn't even the worst we've been through. We have to remember that. Our nation was devastated by civil war, by the Great Depression, by two world wars. We lost thousands of lives in a matter of hours on 9/11. and in a matter of days as Hurricane Katrina swept across the Gulf Coast. We've endured the AIDS epidemic, and you may recall that in the early 1900s, we lost thousands of people to an influenza epidemic. And yet, we're still able to rise and fight again. Every time we were able to rise and fight again. I read an article that I don't have time to really go into detail about, but this particular journalist said that Donald Trump is going to be the sixth worst president we've had. And as I read through, you know what? He might be right. Some of the things that he mentioned were pretty bad. But the point is that we're going to be here long after Donald Trump packs his bags and leaves the White House. Again, yesterday's marchers in D.C., in Philly, in L.A., in Denver, in London, in Paris made that abundantly clear. And as we celebrate our success today and bask in the glory of that moment, I hope and pray that we remember that the movement that elected Donald Trump is real. There are people who are afraid and found comfort in his message. There are people who genuinely believe in his political, economic, and social programs. He's not stupid. In many ways, he's a very smart man. I don't reject all of his proposals just because they're his. Kent said this last week, and it bears repeating. We need to keep an open mind and an open heart toward them, those who we perceive to be on the other side of the aisle. We can't demonize those who don't share our beliefs. When we single out a particular group just because of their political views, we're othering. And I would say that the very idea that any human being is a them is othering. And how do we square that with our first principle? How do we square that with the inherent worth and dignity of every person? So before anybody gets upset, I'm not suggesting that you have to believe everything Donald Trump says or does. But this does lead me to the notion of tolerance and acceptance. The anti-bullying folks at Quantum Leadership put it this way. Tolerance says, I understand your beliefs are different than mine, so I'll just put up with it and put up with our differences. Acceptance says, I understand that your beliefs are different than mine, and I still love you. There's a huge difference between the two. And I know that for some of us, the political positions held by others are troubling or flat out offensive. Sometimes they're so offensive that we see no other choice but to seek changing them. For example, maybe you have a problem with a conservative Christian neighbor who is opposed to same-sex marriage. You think they're flat out wrong. But is that a reason to totally discard or devalue that neighbor? Does that make your neighbor a bad person? What if you agreed on every other issue that's important to you? I'm just saying, it's messy sometimes. Every day is a new beginning. Every day we have a chance to begin again. On this new day, let's move forward in the spirit of community and be open to the possibility of working together in love and acceptance to build beloved community. Let's start by identifying our commonalities. Even though two people may have deep-seated political differences, they have something in common. They live in the same neighborhood. They both have kids. They work at the same company. They're both human beings. They have something in common. Then listen, truly listen, with an open mind and an open heart. Have a real dialogue. Approach the conversation with the feeling that you can't be 100% right and they can't be 100% wrong. The minute you think you're 100% right on any issue, you're cooked. That kind of close-mindedness, that smugness, doesn't move anyone forward. It only keeps us stuck where we are. Try to understand where the other person's coming from. What's the root of the belief that you find offensive? Are they afraid of something? Are they afraid of change? Take a look for a minute at the people who fought against bathroom bills. We heard parents shouting about wanting to protect their children from male predators. It wasn't really about transgender people. It was about their fear. It was about them wanting to protect their children. That's why we've got to take the time to understand where we're coming from and where we're trying to go. Share your goals. If you can frame the conversation in terms of equality and justice for all, as we saw yesterday, you can move mountains. But if you come at someone in full-on attack mode, however well-intentioned, telling them they're ignorant or they're wrong, you're probably not going to get very far. As stubborn and determined and as entrenched as you can be, so can they. And what does that accomplish? Ask yourself, is there a different way we could go? We saw this during our Black Lives Matter event back in October, where many of us perceived the youth group to be doing it wrong, not correctly participating in dialogue. And they thought we had it all wrong. Yet we all believe that Black Lives Matter. What if the best way forward isn't their way, and it isn't our way, but it's a new way? Differences and conflicts and tensions can be healthy. They can foster change and growth and transformation in ourselves as individuals and society as a whole. But as long as we other those with whom we have differences, as long as we merely tolerate them, the change we see won't be positive or permanent. We won't experience healthy growth or transformation. So on this new day, if you're done hurting, and if you're ready, rise up. Rise up and step back into your power. Many of you started with yesterday's marches. More than 1.5 million people, not including those in D.C., marched in solidarity yesterday, just in this country. Those who marched made their presence known. They roared with a passion and a ferocity that was heard and felt around the world. Let's keep marching. Keep doing our justice work. Keep standing on the side of love. Keep making real connections. Keep driving change. Keep doing the work we've already been doing to build a beloved community. On this new day, look up and out into your sister's eyes and into your brother's face, your country, and say simply, very simply, with hope, good morning.